This is an overcast Saturday morning in Johannesburg, the 12th of March, 2021. These are answers for Teresa Stelikova and the Tangible Territory Review. Question of the virtualization of human encounters. Is there a way of challenging this tendency? My hope is that the Zoom and virtual world we have been pushed into during lockdown will be analogous a bit to the microwave in the kitchen. There was an idea at some point when they first came out that microwaves were going to be the end of stoves and ovens and the traditional kitchen, that everything could be done in this new radiant heat technique. And now we understand, in fact, it's useful for reheating food, for warming the milk, warming a baby's bottle. It certainly has a heating the plates. It certainly has a role, but it has not had anything like the effect that people expected. And there are some things that will certainly change and stay there. I'm sure video conferencing will stay for a lot of businesses and a lot of administrative meetings. It's certainly the best way. But within the arts, there is something about the embodiment, the movement of the body, the feeling of muscles, the contact with other human beings, the seeing, the listening, the touching, whether you're making and whether you're watching, which is very different and which I think there is a hunger for after such a long period of isolation. I think in terms of watching cinema, it's very likely that that will largely stay at home. And here I'm speaking from myself of the ease of watching something on one's bed as opposed to going to the cinema. But I think the question of a live theatrical performance, a live musical performance, is very, very different. In a concert performance or in a theatre performance, I generally feel much more aware of being in an audience watching something being done for me than I would in a cinema, which, even if it is a full cinema, feels a much more solitary experience of watching. I don't think we need to accept the virtualization of the world as a natural evolution. I think that it will become part and a bigger part than it has been before, but this is future prediction, which I'm very skeptical of from my own part. I always get it wrong. Whatever I predicted about the future has always been completely unreliable. Physical distancing. So in South Africa, we're still very far away from getting mass vaccinations. And so we're going to have another, I would guess, year of either more or less physical distancing, depending on the waxing and waning of the pandemic here. But last year, we started with one of the most rigorous lockdowns. And when that was lifted, after 8 weeks, it was possible for performances and filmmaking to start again. And we did that in the studio and at the Center for the Less Good Idea. And immediately about 13 or 16 of us got COVID. Luckily, we all survived. And then we had the strange circumstance of being like a post-COVID studio. Almost all the people in the studio had COVID, and so couldn't either get it again or give it to someone else, certainly during those first many months of immunity. And so we were able to work in a much more relaxed way than many other people could. And so throughout the middle of last year, although traveling was impossible, there was this blessed period of many, many months uninterrupted working in the studio, something I hadn't had for 45 years. So while in some sense it was an extremely productive and good period of work for me, I was also so aware that so many of the collaborators I work with, musicians, actors, technical people, were not only not able to earn an income, but not even able to practice their métier if they couldn't get to studios, if no performances could be done. I think there are new forms which have emerged. So I think the Whereas general Zoom webinars and things and Zoom panel discussions are a nightmare for me, and I, of course, had to take part in more of them than I would like. But it seems a very terrible form to be talking to people when you can't see them, you can't see who's bored by what, who's interested. All the micro signs we get of knowing that we live in a community of human beings disappear when people have, you know, both their microphones and their cameras switched off. And even if they do, to look at an audience of 200 in front of you or to look at 200 postage stamps on a screen is a very different experience. The one exception I would say has been talks which have been in the form of me and my studio informally talking to people and showing them the studio. This is something that's not possible in an in-person lecture where you're not in the studio and you don't have your studio to walk around. And there's been an intimacy and an informality in a lot of those interactions, which is something that seems something gained, which one had not had before, hadn't thought of doing before, and which I'm sure will continue. But for a more considered formal lecture, the Zoom has been a very, for me, unsatisfactory form to make a lecture, slightly less unsatisfactory to listen to other lectures. But even then, I'd much rather watch a recording of a lecture done in front of a real audience. As an example, watching films from my limit rather than crave theatre and live performance, the presence of others. We had our first live performance at the Centre for the Less Good Idea a couple of weeks ago. A small audience in a largish space so that there was lots of distance and lots of air between everyone. A musical performance of 6 musicians and about 70 people in the audience. And it was astonishing the delight that people had in being back together and seeing something live in front of them. The pleasure was palpable. But it took an effort. I think I find it in myself also, a kind of a hermit-like retreating. The default position after supper is either to go back into my studio or to watch something on a screen. And the thought of, getting up, getting into the car, driving all the way through town, you know, looking over your shoulder as you park your car in dodgy parts of town to go to the performance is an effort. So when there was a hump to get over, but when that was over, there was an enormous satisfaction in being back in. It was a feeling of, oh, yes, I remember. We used to do this. And whether enough people will remember or get over that hump is yet to be seen. Lockdown Town is a reflective pause. I say interesting ideas from the energy of collaborations. Can I say anything about this? And is there anything about the vacuum offers that can benefit people creatively? I think that temperamentally people work in different ways. There are some artists who don't want anyone to see their work until it is finished, who want to make sure everything is perfect. I'm the opposite. I kind of need, as it emerges, to be seeing the work in other people's eyes, to see how it is being received, to see which sections seem to be intriguing or not. It's a kind of trying to see myself in other people's looking at the work. And so even when we write our most lockdown, there's one of my assistants and collaborators who lives on our property was part of our bubble, and he worked with me in a long film project we were working on. And some of it I presume I could have done entirely on my own, but it would have been very difficult not to have the conversation, the looking through someone else's eyes. I presume for many writers for whom there's no conversation until the words are on the paper, the vacuum time was good and was productive. For me, it made it possible to work on a long-term project, which is a series of films about the studio, about what happens in the studio. The studio is a place of making and of making sense, which I'd wanted to do for a year or more. It was finally possible to have the open months to work on it. It'll be a series of 8 or 9 episodes, each about 40 minutes long. And it's a 2-year project, so to have uninterrupted time to work on it. And since the extreme lockdown, being able to work with a small crew in the studio, sometimes even performers, has been a blessing. And the project's now about just over halfway done. Another 4 episodes to make. And I hope to be able to finish it this year or early next year, which would be impossible with the usual, if it stuck with the normal schedule of exhibitions in other parts of the world and particularly rehearsals and performances in different places. For the questions of Zoom and potentials in what it has to offer, I mean, the technology is astonishing, and the quality of image, if you think what the image of the start of Skype was in the first sort of internet video conferencing technology, it does grow and change, and resolution gets better, and people learn how to use it. It's a bit like the change from, I suppose, from when you had studio photographers taking photographs and then the advent of the box brownie camera, that they went from an era of very beautiful images and carefully thought images of how people look to that kind of disappearing. And we're in that phase now, if you think of the ugliness and crassness of the Zoom images of Zoom and what people are showing you and what you have to, how people appear and what their presence is compared to their presence in live or on a stage. But presumably there'll be a way that this will change and can be improved. Do you have any thoughts of the role that art can play in making sense of our situation? Art always is about making sense of situations, complex or simple, of showing contradiction and paradoxes, of uncertainty. And I think uncertainty has been one of the key words of this pandemic, of not even the most informed scientists or people really having an idea of what was going to be the next step or what was best practice or what policy should be followed. So something that artists would be castigated for being so vague, so uncertain, for putting one line down and changing it and putting another line, in some ways is a good demonstration of how the world is. Subverting the attempts at virtualization. I mean, I find myself, again, it's easier for me to talk from the inside out, both resisting and embracing it. So I work on a project now which is, apart from this long-term film project of what happens in the studio, a project which is a film for a Swiss orchestra playing a Shostakovich symphony. So the orchestra will be playing live with a live audience in a real concert hall, and on a screen behind them is the film will be projected that I am making. And it's a film because it's a Shostakovich symphony from the 1950s. It has a kind of I'm working with my designer, making models of a kind of possible Soviet museum in which this film will unfold. So there are 3 things that I work on. The one is this literal film for the Swiss orchestra. The second is thinking, what would it be to digitize these model sets we're making, very beautiful sets made out of cardboard, photostats, things like that. And the paper and wooden puppets that we're putting inside it, scan them, do digital mapping of them, 3D creation, put it inside a game engine, and have people, as it were, navigate through the strange space that we are making, examine the different rooms, put a live performance in there. So that's turning the cardboard into a digital virtual reality. But at the same time, as I'm seeing this, I think this would be a rather fantastic theatre performance made full scale, these models enlarged to a larger scale, or put in different rooms of a museum which you walk through and see different live performances happening. So it both has a real incarnation, which is the film which is underway, and a possible digital existence, and then a possible live performance existence. And all of these things swirl around, and one or other, well, the film will be real, and the live performance maybe, and the digital maybe. And so it's both embracing and resisting the algorithm. And the piece finally, and I guess, has to be about the edges of the human. I mean, there was the Soviet attempt in the 1920s by so many writers, Trotsky amongst others, to think of the human as a machine that could be perfected by good human engineering, the way a machine would be. And there is a tendency now, or not the tendency, the project now, to see how human machines can be, both in terms of learning, in performance, in all of those things. So these edges of the virtual and the real, or the mechanical and the real, are questions which have been there for quite a while and which continue in different forms. And so the project, one way or another, will both embody but discuss or be concerned with those questions. Good, I hope that answers the questions you had. It's been very nice talking to you, Teresa. And I'll end the answers now.